Hey guys, welcome back to Percussion Perspective. This is Kevin.
This is Remy.
Hopefully you guys enjoyed the last episode we had, where we had a great conversation with Adam Bruce. We hope to have many guests on, and we hope to have Adam on again, because we did not have enough time to chat about everything with him, but I really enjoyed that conversation. Remy didn't though, right?
I actually did not enjoy it. No. It was great. Like Kevin said, Adam had like something to do. So we kind of had like a hard stop time that afternoon when we were recording, and we were like, oh, that's like, you know, almost an hour and a half away. I'm sure we'll be fine. And it was like, we talked right up until that time, and still had more that we could have talked about. So, I hope you guys enjoyed that, because we really did.
Yeah, and let us know if you like the guest stuff, because I know at some point it can get annoying just hearing us and hearing our perspective on things.
Stop.
So today's topic, we are going to talk about suspended cymbal stuff. And I know that right off the bat, that could sound like a very boring, mundane conversation. But we feel like we have a lot of information for especially people that do not have a percussion teacher on their staff, and maybe they have a kid in the back using hammers on a 45-inch suspended cymbal. And so we wanted to give a couple of...
tam-tam?
Yeah. We wanted to give a couple of tips and tricks, and just things that we talk to our kids about, and just some proper technique things. So I think let's start right off the bat with like selecting a cymbal. So just like the kind of basics of understanding what kind of cymbal. So I know that I've had in the past, like especially kind of in high school, cause they're kind of a little bit more free to choose stuff, but they'll pick like a small, you know, maybe like a 14-inch cymbal, and they're trying to roll on it. It doesn't sound good. So my recommendation at least is like 16 inches or more is generally.
Yeah. I would say 16 to 18 would probably be your like average there.
Yeah, I think my, like when I bought a new cymbal, I bought like the classic orchestral cymbal for my middle school. And I think we got an 18 though, but I can't remember. I think it was like an 18.
Yeah, especially for middle school. I mean, you don't need anything super fancy. You don't need to go buy, you know, like the highest end Zildjian cymbal or the highest end Sabian or what, you know, whatever brand you want to buy. There, you can spend, you know, like some of the cymbals that drum set cymbals that I have, like I think my ride cymbal was like $500 or something. And yeah. I like, traded in towards that. But anyway, yeah, you don't need to spend more than probably a couple hundred dollars on a decent cymbal for your middle school band. And we'd kind of talked before we were about to record this, and you know, these tips can apply to anybody, but we were kind of talking like we want a band director, maybe that's not a percussionist, to be able to listen to this episode and then be able to have, you know, four or five tips that they can, you know, like say out to the suspended cymbal player in the back of the room or whatever during rehearsal to kind of help them, or like, you know, walk through the band and go back and help or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say 16 to 18 inches. You also don't want anything that's like super thick. Like there are some older cymbals that were really, really thick. And a lot of the times you can't even tell what they are. They're so old, but like all of the branding has come off of them. Yep. And usually what they end up being is old marching band cymbals, like crash cymbals that the straps have been taken off because they've rotted away. And they've just kind of like stuck it on a cymbal stand or whatever. And it's basically impossible to get it to sound good because it's so thick that you're only hearing like one tone. You're not hearing like a series of overtones and like harmonics and things like that. So yeah, I would say almost the thinner, the better, you know, like a medium weight or a thin weight suspended symbol is going to sound the best as well. It's easier to get it to respond.
Yeah. And a symbol that is kind of meant for a suspended symbol. Like,
don't use like a hi-hat symbol, like he was saying earlier.
And your kids will try to do that. Anytime I've, like, if we're playing a percussion ensemble and like a lot of symbols are taken, I have found a kid that will show up and I'm like, oh, that symbol looks really small. And it's like, yeah, he took the hi-hat apart. And I hate when kids do that. I hate when they try to like Frankenstein their own.
Yeah.
I hate when I like find stands that have been Frankenstein. I say that all the time. So like Remy said, you don't need to have a fancy one for your middle school, but if you can at some point, like if you fundraise or you get a grant or something, it would be good for your kids to have a decent one just so they can kind of have a little more ownership and respect of it. But I also know that for the first couple of years at my job, it was like, let's get kind of the cheap stuff or let's move stuff down as we get new stuff to the high school. But yeah, we still, in marching band, I mean, I still use like some of those really old cymbals in the front ensemble that like used to say field or something or whatever on them, the really old ones. So you got anything else on selection?
No, I don't. I think just knowing that like size and thickness are like kind of the two contributing factors to a cymbal. Knowing the diameter, right? Cymbals are measured in diameter in inches. So not anything too small, but not anything too big. You don't want like a 22 inch suspended cymbal. That's probably going to be too much to manage. And then the thicker, the harder it is to get it to actually have a good sound. And kind of as you get to that thinner range, you can get it to, it takes less energy for it to respond. So especially for younger kids, you know, a smaller or a less thick cymbal is going to be a little bit better.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some like teaching techniques or some things that we know that maybe how we start off the process in beginning percussion with teaching a suspended cymbal roll. Do you want to start us off?
Yeah. So you are playing a rudiment when you play a suspended cymbal roll. And we should say, like, we'll talk about some of the different sounds that you get, but 90% of the time when a kid plays a suspended cymbal, especially in concert band, it's just like a crescendo into the, you know, into a cadence, right? And, or into the end of a phrase, beginning of another phrase or whatever. So yeah, 90% of the time it's just rolling on a suspended cymbal, but that is a rudiment. That's a single stroke roll. That's like rudiment number one right there. And so it should be pretty easy to teach them, you know, as long as you've taught them how to roll on a keyboard, it should be about the same technique. So it's just a single stroke roll. You know, you're not trying to get a buzz or anything. But you do want to be careful. It's like every time you touch the cymbal, you're technically muting it at the same time, or you're kind of stopping it from vibrating as much. So you do want to make sure that your roll speed isn't so fast that you're dampening the cymbal at the same time, or that you're moving the mallets fast enough to where it's kind of like, you know, there's not really any rebound to a suspended cymbal, at least when you're using mallets, but you want to make sure, you know what I'm trying to say? Like,
yeah, I mean, I think try to make your suspended cymbal roll kind of as slow as you can with your hand speed.
Yeah.
Essentially. So your hand speed will change based on the tempo of the piece and how long you kind of have to crescendo. But you said
and your dynamic.
Right. And you said it exactly right. It's like the kid should understand that they are taking a single stroke roll and applying it. So if the tempo is, you know, like something like that, 80, 90 ish, 100, you are going to basically play 16 notes. Da 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 da. Right. And be able to have them understand that they're gradually crescendoing that suspended cymbal roll while playing a single stroke roll. And you could have your kids do this on a practice pad. If you're kind of learning this as a group, just have them start really low, essentially at nothing, which we'll kind of get to, and then slowly get louder and louder and crescendo and ending with a downbeat. And, you know, if the tempo is a little bit quicker, let's say, you probably wouldn't want to go, but you could take it to triplets, right? Yeah. And just da 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 da. And if it's even faster, you can go to eighth notes. I think just especially for like sixth grade, seventh grade, maybe into eighth grade, hopefully by eighth grade, they've got it down. But sixth and seventh, or middle school, whatever age, whatever group you're teaching, if they can understand that there's just a skeleton underneath that roll, then I right. think it will make it easier. I always have the kid who like, well, they don't understand where the roll should end. And generally in middle school music, it's like it is ending with a crash. It's like someone else is pitting a crash. So they're kind of equal in the,
yeah.
in their roles there. So yeah, just teach them with a skeleton. And I think it essentially will the tempo will be fine.
Yeah. That's a really good thing is, you know, it's just, hey, just play 16ths for a measure. You know, most of the time a suspended cymbal roll is four beats. It's just like the measure before an impact or something. So just having them understand like, you know, you're playing a measure of 16th notes there with a release probably on beat one. Releases are sometimes written, sometimes they're not, but I think just going ahead and going all the way to beat one is fine.
Yeah, it's probably the last thing that the composer is going to think about.
Right. Like, yeah.
Making that clear.
But I mean, I would say 90% of the time, that's what you're wanting is like, you know, that lead up to an impact. And then often there is like a crash that another player is playing, you know, like Kevin said. I would say one advanced tip here though is, you know, give them a skeleton, give them a rhythm underneath to play. But then I think suspended cymbal is a little bit more effective if it stays softer longer so that you're not, you know, you really don't want an even crescendo. You sort of want it to like, really even, well, that I just said you don't want even, and then I said even. You want it to evenly crescendo, but not get past like mezzo piano, mezzo forte, and then sort of mushroom out. At least in my opinion, that's what sounds best. To sort of explode out at the very end, and so if you can speed up your hands right there on like the last beat, like, you know, if you're at this speed or whatever. 1-t-t-t-2-t-t-3-t-t-t-z-g-t-t-t-t-da. If you do a sextuplet there between 4 and 1, like that's going to give you a little bit more of a flourish there at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. Kids, when they're learning this young, they just kind of like get loud fast. So, that's exactly right. And that goes like the getting loud part at more later in the measure or whatever in the crescendo is good for sixth grade all the way up through into marching band stuff, especially in marching band. You want to make sure it's kind of happening on the later end of things, but also every suspended cymbal roll can be different too. Something in middle school can be like they at some point they should understand that like a piano to a forte roll is different than like a piano to a mezzo forte roll or something. And, you know, you may not get to the big difference between that, but, you said something too. I wanted to confirm your accuracy on, but starting at basically nothing, like starting, if you've got a suspended cymbal roll, it kind of doesn't really matter unless it's a very specific note in a piece or something where they do want that suspended cymbal to start loud, which I can't really right now think of any time that's ever happened where it's like your roll says like forte to double forte. It's like, you're not going to go, okay, here I go, and automatically hit with like a full extension note on your first thing, right?
Yeah, because then it's going to sound like that's
the impact. It's a crash. Yeah, it's like a crash. Yeah.
So, starting at nothing is good. And I often tell students, like, especially if it's more than a measure long or if maybe the tempo is really slow, like, I don't even want to hear your suspended cymbal until like beat three. Like, yeah. I don't want to hear that crescendo. You need to be so low and like, you know, just whatever your hand speed is, but yeah, it just needs to be so low for a beat or two that it kind of sneaks in and then all of a sudden comes out of the texture.
Yeah.
Cause yeah, you're right. If all of a sudden it's just shh at, you know, at that volume, it kind of loses its effect.
Yeah.
What you writing over there?
I was marking off things that we have talked about, so I don't bring up
keeping us
10 minutes checklist. Later, I'm not like, hey, let's remember we start at nothing. And one quick tip, and we didn't even talk about this before, but playing on the outside of the cymbal is generally the best place. I actually think when I was in high school, my faintest memory of playing a suspended cymbal was I actually played like on the edge, but like my mallets were like together. They were close. I don't think anyone ever was like, hey, you need to actually play out on the edge because it's going to kind of help vibrate the whole cymbal. So that was weird. I remember doing it that way.
Yeah. Like you were like both of your hands were at like 6 o'clock or whatever.
Yeah. It was like 6:35 and 6:25.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Like they were like splitting 6 o'clock. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. It's definitely out on the edge. Like as you know, as close as you can get to the edge without actually playing on the, you know, without missing the cymbal. And then like at 3 o'clock and 9 o'clock, like just opposite sides, you know? And you know, if you're at like 4 and 8, like that's fine. But you want to, like Kevin said, you kind of want to be on opposite sides of the cymbal so that, one side isn't getting like favored as far as like, being activated, you know, you want to evenly vibrate the cymbal from both sides. And that's going to give you, a smoother crescendo too.
Yep. And just the last thing on that is making sure your kids are playing with even strokes. So you don't want a lot of times you'll have a kid playing with their right hand, and by the end of the suspended cymbal roll, you kind of hear like a duh, 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 instead of having just like an even crescendo. I hope that sound didn't come across as weird.
Yeah, that was where I want to be done now.
Let's talk about what to use to roll or to play on a suspended cymbal. I think that most of the time in middle school, like in sixth grade, if your kids don't have like marimba mallets yet, like if you, depending on what you have them get, just have a pair of mallets for your kids to roll on. Vic Firth makes a suspended cymbal specific mallet. It's the BC-S1, yeah, the Beckon suspended cymbal mallet. I like them because they have like a really good weight to them. I bought a good, probably 4 or 5 pairs of those 4 or 5 years ago, and they're like all dead. They're like all gone, which I don't understand that, because that means that
doesn't make any sense.
Kids have been like chewing on them or using them to play timpani, or I mean, hopefully not, but
marimba mallets is what you should be using. Like, yes. Soft to medium marimba mallets.
And heavy. Is useful. Yeah. I think back in the day, like in a lot of those Jared Spears percussion ensembles, a lot of that music used to say like suspended cymbal with timpani mallet. Have you ever noticed that?
Yeah.
Which is
there's
like
a lot of drum set players that have like a pair of timpani mallets in there.
Yes.
In their stick bag, and they like use them for suspended. And that just makes me cringe.
It kind of works, but I don't like the way it feels, the way that because it should have a little bit more weight to it instead of it being so light. And I think the weight of a good suspended cymbal, or the weight of a good marimba mallet, kind of helps the feeling of just playing it. And it probably produces a better swell, I would guess.
Yeah. The more weight you have, the more it's going to activate the cymbal, the faster it's going to activate the cymbal, and you don't have to do as much work. So yeah. 100%. Don't have to buy special suspended cymbal mallets. If you want to, you can. But, you know, the Vic Firth M113s, the Robert Van Sice, those are like the medium hard, or mediums or medium hard. Those are fine. The 112s are fine. Actually, in college, what we would go for a lot is like the Nancy Zeltzman series, those Encore mallets that we all had. The fours, the khaki brown colored ones, those were really great suspended cymbal mallets because they were heavy enough, and then they were you know, a medium weight. So yeah, anyway, the only
there's
other
probably
thing,
a lot of people telling us right now like, how dare you use like our fancy expensive marimba mallets on a cymbal, but it's like
Encore just had a stroke.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, the only other thing that you would use on a timpani, what, on a suspended cymbal, would be like some, you know, sometimes suspended cymbal calls for like a drumstick or a triangle beater or something where it's more of a timekeeping thing rather than like a crash or a crescendo, which, like we said, you know, 90% of suspended cymbal stuff is just going to be crescendos. But every once in a while in a concert band piece, you'll get like some quarter notes or like a one, two, te four, one, te two, three, te four. You get like a little pattern like that and like a ride pattern in the back, what we'll call a ride pattern. And that, like, just a drumstick is fine for that usually. Triangle beater usually isn't really that great of a sound, unless it's like a scrape or something, which that's a sound that you can get. But yeah, those different implements, like, is really just going to be some softer, heavier marimba mallets or a drumstick. You want to talk about like sounds that we get on a suspended cymbal? We kind of already got into that a little bit.
Yeah. And I was going to say that there are, you know, if you go all the way back to our choosing the right stick episode, we talked about how all of those different, the tip types of a stick can make a drastic sound difference on a suspended cymbal. So anytime I have a concert band suspended cymbal part that wants you to play some kind of rhythmic pattern with a snare drum stick, generally I go for like a drum set stick. If you can, something that has like a smaller tip, it's a little more articulate and it's not so dull sounding. Like if you used an SD1 general or just one of those thicker beaded concert sticks, it's not going to like cut through the ensemble as much, because the composer's goal is probably, you know, they're thinking like a ride cymbal on a drum set. So they kind of want it to be articulate and dingy, if that makes sense. And so, yeah, the tips matter. I'm not a fan. We've already talked about this, but don't use a nylon tip stick for something like this.
You might say something.
Who knows if it would make like that massive of a difference to the listener. But that's just, I'm just not a fan. I know Remy's not either. Another sound that you could use is brushes. You know, like if you were, there's been parts before in like percussion ensembles that we've played, brushes are a really cool sound also. Obviously, if you know, those are probably most popular on a drum set, but they can make a really light, cool sound. So brushes are great too.
Brushes are good for different textures. But again, it's like, you're not just going to be like, hey, why don't you play that part on brushes? Like, it's normally going to say that, like the composer is usually, or the editor is usually going to put that in there.
Yeah.
So as far as like different sounds, like I can think of like three main sounds on a suspended cymbal.
Let's
and it's
hear
like
them.
your swells, right? Your crescendos, what I call like a smash. Okay, which would just be like a, you know, like a crash, but on a suspended cymbal. And then like that ride pattern, what we were talking about. So the first two you're going to play with mallets, hopefully. Sometimes you could get like a, you know, sometimes it'll be written for like a crash on a suspended cymbal with a drumstick. And at that point, like Kevin said, please use drum set sticks. Don't use like, you know, your $30 like Vic Firth symphonic sticks and play like on the shoulder of a suspended cymbal and get a crash, because you're gonna chew up your nice drumsticks.
Let me say something about that really quick. I would, if you're in like especially middle school and it says like crash with stick, if that's like in place of a crash cymbal, like handheld crash cymbals, I would say either that, or I would tell my kids to either one, use their mallets and like on both ends just do like a big hit, which is probably what you were talking about, smash. I would probably do that before I told them to hit it with a stick, like either that or go get like an actual crash cymbal and do that, have two cymbals there, because that would sound very in your face, I think.
I'm thinking back to like college wind ensemble. Like, I there's been some times where it's like you have to play a quick crash on a suspended, and it says like with stick, and it's because you just came from a tom setup and you have two beats to, you know, which, so it's like, but that is a sound. But that smash usually is going to be like with those suspended cymbal mallets, at 3 o'clock and 9 o'clock at the same time, you know, so you're just getting a really fast response. And you're always going to get a better sound if you like with a double stop rather than just one mallet, right? Because it kind of shocks it into, kind of like shocks that crash into existence rather than if you're just playing on one side, you only activate like that half of the cymbal.
Yeah, it's just louder.
And then like we said, with time using those drumsticks, you can sometimes get like a dome sound, you know, like, or a bell. And that's just like that raised area in the center of the cymbal. And that's usually going to sound better with like the shoulder of the stick. So you're going to use, the tip or the bead on the body of the cymbal about halfway between the middle and the edge. That's where your ride cymbal patterns are going to live. And then if it wants a dome, you're almost going to have to like turn your grip a little bit so that you can get the shoulder of the stick or the side of the stick. And that's going to give you a little bit better sound on the dome.
Yeah. Yep. I had that written down. You jumped to it. So good for you.
Beacha.
Yeah. And I know that some of this is like, why are these two weirdos just talking about different sounds on a suspended cymbal? But I think it's good. It's good for the kid to also look at their music and just analyze what it says and what they're supposed to do. Which leads into kind of the last thing that I had about suspended cymbal would be like all of the techniques, around choking and dampening and stuff like that. So most of the time a suspended cymbal roll is just going to end with them crescendoing out of it and then just letting the cymbal kind of resonate and not choking it. Most of the time it's written out like that with an actual tie or a, does it have another word? Am I thinking of the right word?
Yeah. Like LV sometimes at the end, like let vibrate.
Yeah. So yeah. Cause I have kids all the time say, should I let that vibrate or should I choke it? Which is a good thing that those kids are thinking about that. But you can almost all the time just go with whatever the band is doing. So like, obviously, if it's at the end of a piece and you're crescendoing into the end of a piece, then you're going to choke it, especially if the band is finishing a piece and the sound is gone. So just listen to the music most of the time or read the score. Look at your part, whatever it says. But make sure the kid understands what their role is in that case of they should actually let it. What I say?
What their role is.
Nice. They should understand that and know whether they should kind of choke that roll or let it vibrate. And then when it does come to choking, just make sure that you basically just grab the cymbal with both hands right where you are rolling. I like to. So again, you're on that 3 o'clock and 9 o'clock, you're rolling. If you're supposed to choke, just boom, bring those hands in and choke it.
Yeah. Yeah, you kind of like, it's almost like similar to muffling timpani, which I don't know if we've really talked about on the podcast a whole lot yet, but you are.
I think we're scared.
Probably, yeah. We're, you know, you're just kind of like kicking those mallets out into the side or into the back fingers and then enough to where you can get like a little bit of your palm and maybe your fulcrums loose or free so that you can just stop the cymbal. Another one is like a forearm choke. Which is more of a marching band move, front ensemble move, but you know, you're rolling into it. And most of the time you're like leaning over a marimba to get to those cymbals, but you know, you can just still hold on to your mallets and just bring your forearms in on each side of the cymbal and just push down and that'll stop it as well. But yeah, that's all really good stuff. I have kids ask me all the time, like, do I let that, like I had one kid the other day. He was like every single suspended cymbal roll, he was just choking at the end, you know, and it was like in like a slow piece and everything. And he's like, 1, 2, 3, 4,
choke
and just cutting it. Yeah. I was like, hey, why are you doing that? And he was like, well, because it stops right there. And I was like, well, yeah, but see that little tie, that means it needs to ring. And he's like, oh.
So yeah, anyway. I need to do a better job of teaching my kids that idea of if it says let it ring, if it has that little tie or it says LV, they should understand that. But also it can always, I hate when I teach a kid something and then like a couple of weeks later, I'm like, well, we're not going to do it like that actually because the band is doing this and we're changing we're changing what we're doing. And then they're like, oh, good. So I don't have to actually follow this music or something. But
right. Yeah, I've taught, I mean, I've taught that to them, is that this kid was just, you know, being a weirdo, I guess. I was like, yeah. doesn't that just sound wrong to you?
Yeah. And sometimes they apply something else. Like if they have to dampen a lot on timpani, then they think that like their brain is just going into like fight or flight mode, and they like,
yeah, kind of.
Or they think they did a bad job on the roll, so they don't want anybody to hear it.
Yeah.
Maybe
it takes some time to percussionist is so nuanced. It takes some time to get used to all of those techniques. But yeah, one last thing I wanted to say was like, suspended cymbal seems like one of those kind of like, oh, I'm playing suspended cymbal, but it can actually be a really cool instrument. Not a lot of composers write very well for it. A lot of composers do write it, you know, it's like, okay, your kid that can't really play anything very well is going to play, you know, that's kind of unfortunately what it turns into sometimes, but it is really important to know how to play suspended cymbal and to get how to get a good sound out of a cymbal. And there's a lot of techniques and a lot of ways that you can write for suspended cymbal that make it really interesting. It's just kind of up to that, you know, up to that composer to do that.
Yeah. And something I just thought of right now, this is like live perspective, is a cool thing you could do if you have like a middle school kid who is that kid that plays suspended cymbal and everything. Maybe add something, if it's just a concert, add something to their part. Like they play a little role and then they do pick up some sticks and play some quarter notes, or they play a little rhythm that you write that matches with the part. It's almost like if, you know, there's always that section of a piece in a middle school piece where it's like everything kind of goes away and what percussion instrument is added? The triangle. And it's like, make the triangle part. I mean, well, the triangle part's going to be the triangle part, but then maybe add in a suspended cymbal part with a stick or even brushes that kind of adds into that texture a little bit. Obviously I'm saying something that no one has the time to sit down and write out a part for their kid, but just any way you can maybe make that suspended cymbal role a little bit more exciting for that kid, especially if it's a 70 measure piece and they roll twice.
Yeah. And there are parts like that, like, yeah. You know, oh, great. This contest piece that we're playing has a suspended cymbal part and there's three rolls in the whole thing. So, yeah. But I would say, Kevin said, like, do that for a concert. Don't do that for a contest.
Yeah.
Just, you know, and you can tell the kid, hey, when we play this at our concert, you can play this. But when we perform for concert, like you need to not or contest. Yeah, when we perform to contest, you need to not add that stuff in there. And that can be just as simple as writing the rhythm on the board, having the kid copy it down, you know, at measure 46, there's 16 bars and I'm going to play that rhythm for 16 bars or something. So,
or they could like double up the triangle part with a brush.
Yeah. Or like something. Anything to make them feel a little bit more involved in that part. So,
and they can probably get better. Like if they are bad at rhythms, they could like, that could be a time that they actually improve.
Yeah.
With their rhythms. But anyway, yeah, I think that's about it. I think our big goal here is if you're just a band director and you don't have a percussion person on staff, just next time you're rehearsing, look back at your suspended cymbal player and just maybe throw one of these tips their way. And it would maybe make them be a little more excited about their part and think about it a little more professionally and not just think that they got a part that is easy. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Anything else? Well, I was just going to say, talking to your percussionist goes a long way. Adam, I think, said it last week, like that, you know, that'll win you their attention for like another week or whatever. If you can just walk back there and be like, hey, like separate those mallets and roll evenly and speed up at the end whenever you want a crescendo. And like, I think that's one of the, I guess before we're done, one of the biggest mistakes that I see kids make is, and maybe you mentioned it earlier, is not getting to the end of the crescendo and like either getting there early or getting there late.
Yeah.
Because as you get older, it's really easy to just not necessarily play a rhythm underneath that suspended cymbal roll. Like me personally, I mean, I don't like, am I playing fives or sevens or six and a halves? Like I'm kind of just playing whatever the appropriate roll speed is for the piece. But in my head, I'm obviously counting or I'm like moving my foot or something, but that's harder to do for younger kids. So that that skeleton rhythm becomes really important. And then as they do get older and you let them get away from those skeleton rhythms underneath, you just got to make sure that they're really, really timing, because they might not actually be playing like a common rhythm underneath there.
Yeah. I'm never asking if you have anything else again.
Okay.
I'm just kidding. Cool. Okay. You got anything else?
Yeah. No.
Cool. Okay. Well, hopefully you guys enjoyed this. Learned something about the sus symbol.
Yeah. And another thing, I mean, I'm just kidding.
All right. All right. Thank you guys for listening. We will see you on the next one.
Send us one of them their emails. Thank you.